Welcome to another episode of the Confessions of a Recovering Landlord podcast, where you'll learn the secrets commercial landlords would prefer you not know. I'm your host, Jan Gibbons, along with my co-host and experienced commercial real estate broker, Bob Gibbons.
That's me.
Brought to you by Riata Commercial Realty, where we exclusively represent users of office and warehouse properties. Landlords have representation. Do you? I feel like today's episode should be called Law and Order.
Why is that?
You know how they're always doing a show that mimics something you just heard on the news and it always says ripped from the headlines. Well, that's what today's episode is about, ripped from the headlines.
Yeah, but we're recording this on Valentine's Day. So what kind of headline was that going to be? Might have to.
That is behind a paywall, sir. Okay, but okay, in all seriousness,
going to that website again.
What are you mumbling about?
I'm never going to that website again.
Okay. Focus.
Okay, sorry.
We really did have several topics that we were both interested in that have recently been in the headlines, and we thought we'd just pontificate on them a bit. The first one that I think is kind of interesting is small leases shape office demand in Dallas-Fort Worth region. It's kind of leveling the playing field, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The report was coming from CoStar, and it said that 50% of all leases in the Dallas-Fort Worth area were 5,000 square feet or less. And they didn't mention it, but if you look at the graph, it's actually... if you get to 10,000 square feet and less, it's like 75% of all leases are like 10,000 square feet or less. So the small companies really dominate the occupancy. And
well, let me correct that or expound on it. It's not just the small companies. It's the companies who are choosing to be small. You might have a ginormous company, but they decide to reduce their footprint and send a lot of people home.
Well,
so a lot of people are choosing this size now.
When you compare the deals done in 2023 versus the average deal done in 2017 to 2019, the average size is down 17%. But I think if you were to kind of go to your point, if you were to look at that by size range, so you say, you know, anybody a bit above 50,000 square feet and below, my view and my experience is that the bigger the company, the more they're downsizing as a percentage of the space they previously leased. So the bigger companies are falling into the smaller ranges now in many cases, and the smaller companies are keeping the amount of space they had or even growing in many cases. So it's kind of leveling things out and kind of skewing things. So the 17% reduction, if you were only looking at 50,000 square feet or bigger spaces, I bet you that reduction would be much greater than 17%. Mm-hmm. And if you only looked at the below 10,000 square foot size originally, that their reduction would actually be much lower than 17%. Now, I don't have the empirical data to prove that, but that's what my experience and what I'm observing would tell me.
The thing that I'm finding interesting is it's the mom and pops that are saying, everyone back in, everybody back in. And then it's the big Fortune 500s that are going, how are we feeling today?
You know, what's interesting?
Do we need a nap room? You know, it's the exact opposite of what you would have thought years ago.
You know, the same article is talking about how tenants in Dallas-Fort Worth committed to 15 million square feet in new leases in 2023, down from an average of 20 million in 17 to 19. Well, that sounds really good. It sounds like, man, we got all this activity going on. However, at the very end of the article, it says tenants moved into 385,700 square feet last year, though vacancies remained elevated. So what they're really not telling you is the 15 million square feet is activity. So that's the total number of leases that were signed. However, what they're not telling you is those were a net reduction in space.
Absorption rate, yeah.
And the overall net absorption, you know, move outs versus move ins was only 385,000 square feet positive. The thing that I thought was interesting, though, is I went to CoStar myself and looked up some numbers. because I was trying to verify the 385,000 square feet as a positive absorption for the last 12, well, for the year 2023. And I pulled up a report that showed a negative 31,000 square feet of absorption and for the last 12 months. And so I actually called the customer help line, the customer service line of CoStar.
Oh, they love you.
Well, my comment was, hey, you put out this document, this article saying that it was 385,700 square feet positive absorption last year. And yet when I pull up your market report, it says the last 12 months was 31,000 square feet negative. Now, if that report that I pulled up on CoStar today was as of today,
right,
the last 12 months as of today, well, that includes the month of January and a few days and
it's a rolling February. Date.
So, but the guy that I talked to couldn't answer the question. So he took my, my info and said he would call me back and hasn't yet. So I was hoping to have that before the podcast.
To be determined.
So anyway,
it'll
so
be
that was the first thing.
Ripped from the headlines part due. So the second one, of course, just feeds right off the first one. Dreams of lower interest rates fade as inflation comes in higher than expected. Well, yeah, Jay Powell said, not yet.
Well, they said that on reducing the Fed funds rate, but has nothing to do with it does have something to do with the inflation
cascade.
Rate. But the Fed is going to respond to inflation. The inflation doesn't respond to the Fed. So, yeah, the Fed, inflation rate came in at 3.1%. The funny thing to me was the consequences of that. You know, 3.1 doesn't sound horrible, especially when you consider that the target or the not the target, but the expectation in the market was 2.9%. Mm-hmm. So they only missed it by 0.2%. And as a result, what did they say? Bank stocks for the regional banks fell 5%. The treasury, 10-year treasury jumped to 4.28%. Mm-hmm. Stocks for REITs fell. It's just like, holy crap, we only missed it by 0.2% and all this stuff is happening?
Well, I think they were really banking on the Fed rate getting cut earlier and that doing a cascade of, 30-year mortgages, people are going to be buying houses. That means brand new furniture and, you know, everything that cascades off that. And it just didn't happen. Maybe March. Oh, maybe May. Depends on who you ask. Maybe not this year. I mean, you don't know what that man's going to do.
Well, and the thing that's also interesting on this is our point three on the headlines. $929 billion in commercial property loans are set to mature in 2024, which is a 40% increase of what the previous estimate was.
Value of the loans. Not the actual loans, because it's still 1/5 of all commercial real estate debt is coming due this year. They just missed what that number actually was.
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
That's all right. You go
what
right
you're
ahead.
Saying. I mean, I'm just looking at this and saying that they just messed up the estimate.
Right.
And they just looked at the estimate again, and it was a much higher number, which I'm just like, how can you get 40% off on that? I mean, they're either expiring or they're not expiring. How do you mess that up? I don't know.
They didn't have the right amount written down. Who knows where they got the info from? Again, all this, that's why I hate the way the market bases so much of what happens on hearsay. Because, that's not what we meant to say. What we meant to say was, and then what we say today is we change tomorrow and a lot of stocks are traded off the hearsay information, the whisper campaign.
Yeah, but this is not hearsay. This should be an empirical analysis of outstanding loans and when do they expire. I mean, it shouldn't have anything to do with just the whims of what people are gossiping about or whatever.
People didn't report it. I mean, there's a lot of ways that the information wasn't collected correctly.
Perhaps. But on the heels of the thing that we just read about inflation having gone up and that inflation number popping the 10-year treasury, well, a lot of the loans that people get for commercial real estate and for other kinds of products as well are cued off of a lot of those, the prime rate, the treasury bills, et cetera. So with all of these loans expiring 40% more than previously thought, that means that there's a lot more refinancing that's going to have to be done. at a higher interest rate. So it just kind of doubles down on the problem.
Just a higher interest rate. I mean, that's one thing. What I'm hearing also is the value of the product that the loan was made on is now lower. So if you want to stay in the same category, you're going to have to put 20% more down. It's almost like they're buying the building all over again from the get. They have to make another down payment. Then they have to get a higher refinance rate. It's that, I think, when you're going to have to bring money to the table, not just the increased interest rate, that's when the keys get flipped.
I like the way you say it's like,
I'm not going to pay more money for a product that's like going on a 3-year-old car that, you know, deflated 20% the minute you drove it off the lot. And 3 years later, I'm going to go refi it. And you know what? I'd like to give you an additional down payment on this car. It's just such a lovely thing.
Well, yeah, in this same article, it was saying that commercial property prices fell 21% from a peak in early of 2022. And that office has dropped 35%. Now that's on average. So
that's all? That surprises me.
But, you know, again, you can hide a lot of information in averages. So if you stratify that by, you know, the premium class A, AAA buildings, they haven't probably fallen at all. Maybe their values have gone up, but you get down to the B and C buildings, they've probably fallen even more than that 35%. But they're saying about 25% of the office loans are coming due in 24. So, I mean, I guess the whole point of that is just inflation went up. That means interest rates are going up probably. And yet you have all these things even more expiring than thought. So what is that going to result in? Well,
banks going under.
Possibly, but our point number four, or our headline number four, downtown Dallas office tower sells to lender who still plans conversion to apartments or hotel. Mm-hmm. So this building is an old building. I didn't see in the article what year it was built, but I bet you it was built in like the 70s.
I can look it up. Yeah. And, earlier.
It's not the nicest building in the world. In fact, I showed space in this building probably 2 years ago, and it was a very, very strange building. And the tenant mix and the way it was finished out, it was just a really odd situation. And
1958.
Oh, 58. All right. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, actually.
Corrigan built this 18-story office building.
Interesting. So there was a $13.5 million loan on this building. It was posted for foreclosure once before. I don't remember when that was. But anyway, the lender basically, you know, bought at foreclosure auction this building for $8 million. So they undercut their own loan, $5.5 million, in buying this. But they say they still hope to convert it to a hotel or apartments. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Just another one bites the dust.
Well, and so how does that happen? Did the bank go out and hire a developer and say, here's a box, turn it into this? We've already sunk this much into it. How does that get put together? How does the deal get put together for that?
I mean, you got to find somebody who, you know, is willing to buy it to become the developer of it. I have a hard time imagining that the lender will stay in the deal, you know, for the actual conversion. I guess that's possible. You know, they continue to own it and they bring in somebody else to be a fee developer. The lender pays 100% of it, of the renovations, and the fee developer, you know, does the work and they split the profits in some way. I guess that's one way it could happen. They could just sell the building to somebody and then that company, takes it from there. I mean, if you look at this, I didn't even run the numbers, but so it's, they foreclosed at an $8 million price. And how does it say anywhere? I don't remember that it said what the size of the building was.
18 stories.
Yeah. But they're kind of small floor plates. I should have looked this up before, but let's just say, you know, there's 18 stories and I'm guessing those are probably like 9,000 square foot floor plates. So 49,000. Anyway, I mean, the building's not that big, but even if it's 100,000 square feet, they established an $80 a foot value. I don't know. I should have looked that up. So my apologies for not doing that. But
well, it's interesting. It says by 1995, the building was completely vacant. The city of Dallas proposed to tear it down in 04 to make a park, but the plans fell through. 3J Development bought the building and announced plans to convert it into residences in 2005.
Wow.
So, it's been an idea well cooked for a long time. Just no one's pulling the trigger on it.
Well, and that I think that goes to show that it's just so expensive and complicated mm-hmm. to do that, to do the conversion, to see if the building can even qualify. When I say qualify, does it have the infrastructure that even allows for conversion to hotels right. or apartments? How do you get the financing for that? And so in my mind, it really points to the fact that we need to have more options for conversion. So yesterday morning, for example, I was at a meeting where the president of the Downtown Dallas Inc. organization mm-hmm. spoke. And I asked her, I said, so are there any efforts going on right now to allow conversions to anything other than apartments, condos, and hotels? And she didn't really know of any other options. Now, I mentioned hydroponic farming as something that I'd heard was being done in another city in the U.S. And she mentioned that the tunnel system in Dallas mm-hmm. underneath the streets, that there actually was a proposal out there to turn that into hydroponic farming. I don't know if that was last year or when, but for some reason it didn't happen. It didn't work out. But that requires zoning as well. You know, you have to change your zoning to allow these different things. But we need to have more options, because if you're trying to put people in buildings, that's a whole different thing than if you're trying to put, you know, growing plants or self-storage or, I mean, who knows what else that you could potentially do in there. But the more different things that you can do in a building, the better you're going to be able to preserve the building and create a tax base for.
So you know, like growing cannabis that you can then harvest and sell to Mark Cuban's casino for the Mavs game. I'm trying to think outside the box here.
You're pushing over a lot of dominoes in that one statement.
If it smells like money. Okay. Our last topic. I thought this was a little bit of a stretch.
Okay.
Or shall I say lack thereof.
Shrink.
As Ozempic slims waistlines, it's also bulking up on biomanufacturing space. Reading the whole article about how they think space is going to be used differently because we're all thin, beautiful, and fit was just, I don't know, it cracked me up. They're not, that Frito-Lay is now concerned people aren't going to be buying potato chips because they simply don't have the desire for them.
Well,
until I am dead and decomposed, I will want a potato chip. I don't care what else I'm taking.
Well, the way you said that, it kind of made it sound different than what I got from the article, because the way you just said that, it made me think that you were saying that because people are taking Ozempic, they're not going to use the space in the same way as the consumer. And I read it to say that because Ozempic is so popular and the other, you know, similar mm-hmm. drugs are so popular, that those things are going to demand more space to manufacture them. So okay, it's manufacturing space that's going to be required, not the fact I'm thinner and need a different type of space to occupy myself.
I think that's true as well. But what I had read was that reconfiguration of grocery stores, because you won't be having so much Bud Light yeah. and Lay's potato chips, you're going to be having broccoli and kale, and not a place I'm going. But, and then they talked about how these beautiful, rich, thin people have to have some place to go and promenade. So walking places will be more accessible. Buying of things that fit better, not going to be ordering stuff from Jeff that's a moo-moo. I mean, I had read it. This was an article I read a couple of weeks ago.
I was going to say that wasn't in this one.
Yeah. And I thought it was a stretch, or a lack thereof. How they just thought everything was going to change because people are thin now. People have been going on diets and losing weight forever. It comes back when you stop taking the drug. I just don't see this big shift happening like they think it's going to happen.
Well, the intent of the article that we were talking about today, or that raised us the idea to put this on the agenda, I do believe in that, meaning that the demand for Ozempic is going to require more commercial real estate space be dedicated to manufacturing and production of those kinds of drugs. So that makes perfect sense. I mean, some of those statements that were in this article blew me away. This is the holy grail, the largest, most profound blockbuster drug of our generation. Public forecasts on this are all the way to the moon. They'll probably never catch up to demand. Well, so if you have a product that truly lives up to that hype, if it really has those kinds of sales, of course it's going to make a dramatic impact on the amount of space that that product is going to require. But, you know, all right, so if we, let's say that product right now is occupying 100,000 square feet to produce enough for the country, and it, you know, goes up by 10 times, all right, so now you got 1 million square feet, big whoop. That's not dramatic when you're only dealing with that one item. Now, if it blows up even more than that, if it blows up 1,000%, again, it's more and more and more space for that product. But
you're seeing that across the board in life sciences. This just falls under life sciences to me.
Well, it is part of the life sciences, big pharma sector, I guess you would call it. And life science by itself, I hear, is not blowing up as much as people think. But this segment of it definitely is. But anyway, I guess bottom line is, I'm just saying, if you look at Dallas Fort Worth, for example, we have 1 billion square feet of industrial space. And, you know, is life science industrial space or is life science office space? You know, it can kind of go either way, depending on how you configure the building. You know, you have the old EDS headquarters in Plano that's being converted for a life sciences campus. Mm-hmm. Well, you have life sciences development R&D, the brain trust, and then you have life science, the manufacturer production piece. Right. So those are kind of two different pieces. And the first probably is more office oriented. The second's more warehouse oriented or special build oriented, you know, like air conditioned warehouse oriented.
Right.
So with 1 billion square feet in Dallas Fort Worth, you know, if it has, you know, any Ozempic space right now, how much is it going to have, and what kind of an impact is that going to have on 1 billion square foot market? And then you multiply that by all the other space in the US. Is it going to have an impact? Sure. I mean, cannabis has had an enormous impact on commercial real estate. And
conflate. Cannabis makes you want the Doritos. Ozempic makes you not want the Doritos.
I'm just talking about the production space for cannabis.
Oh.
That has sucked up the industrial space in Colorado, Oklahoma, you know, a lot of other states where they've legalized it, and they've even taken just really old, nasty buildings and used those because. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not people in there. It's plants. And right. Yeah, there's a few people that are in the production of it, but you know, so what? It's basically
it's cameras.
A greenhouse.
A lot of it's being monitored by cameras and a guy in a room watching. The other thing I see happening on the other side of Ozempic is it's going to bring, again, medicine, big pharma to the forefront, because I have a friend who is on this and loving it. But a couple of things she has told me, because I, you know, she's concerned if she gets off of it, what's happening, because she's nearing her goal weight. And well, the maintenance dosage that's required, you have to ramp up this many grams. And it's scientific. Anyway, I said, well, can you take this for life? I mean, what are there any side effects? And she goes, yeah, it can be damaging to your kidney or liver. I said, so you just test that. She goes, exactly. I go in every 3 months and get another prescription. You don't walk into Walgreens and say, hey, you have to go to your primary care physician, he'll write you a prescription, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, every time she goes in to get another prescription, they test those. So there's more lab work being done because of this drug.
Gotcha.
That's going to, you know, Q West and all your diagnostics, all that's going to grow as well. Cause you, that's, as I understand it, that's part of the protocol. In order to get the prescription, those things have to be tested.
Well, you know, another option is just to get food poisoning like I did 3 weeks ago. I lost 11 pounds in 3.5 days and I've only gained half of it back. I'm winning.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Fen-Phen. My girlfriend's husband took it and lost 45 pounds and then heart attack issues and all this. I was so scared for him. And, you know, I get it. I mean, my girlfriend that is on Ozempic right now has told me it's even decreased her desire for drinking. Just not that, you know, I'll have a beverage or something when I go out, but it's not like, hey, Friday night, party time. So she was really liking that. I could tell that it's just... She's learning how her body relates to the drug. And I can't eat that. I'm not going to feel good on that, but I'm okay with this, but that amount. And, you know, it's really becoming more body aware. So in a lot of ways, I think it's a good thing. And other ways I'm like, has it been tested long enough? So I still think there'll be a backlash from it. And then other things may have to happen. I mean, after Fen-Phen, wasn't that damaging to the heart? And a lot of people had to have surgical procedures after that. And
yeah, something. I don't really remember exactly what it was. But yeah. So when you say it reduced her desire for drinking, I assume you mean alcohol, not water and orange juice.
Well, actually, she said that one of the things you need to be doing is drinking a lot of water. And she said, you don't even want to do that because I'm full. Oh. I'm full. You don't have the desire. So she has to force herself to drink well. You don't have the
I'm not a Stanley. You talk about impact.
The ladies' red Solo cup. you think it's water.
You talk about the impact to commercial real estate. Those Stanley cups should be requiring bigger offices, a lot more warehouses, bigger cars.
The old standard from what the 1950s is suddenly today's darling. But yeah, I'll be curious to follow Ozempic and see, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not going to reduce the count of Lay's potato chips in my Walmart. I'm just going to say that.
I thought you were going to say in your pantry.
Oh, nothing's affecting that.
All right. You got anything else today?
No, I think that was the last item of ripped from the headlines, but I kind of like this because it's very topical and it covered a lot of stuff and, of course, how it all relates to our friend CRE.
All right. See you next week or next time.
Thank you for listening. And just a reminder to send in questions to see if we can stump Bob.
Not going to happen.
We really appreciate your taking the time to tune into this episode. We would love it if you would give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening to this on. And if you are on our YouTube channel, we would love to read your feedback in the comment section. Also, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when we publish new episodes. Thanks, and see you next time.
Bye.